Hey.
I just got back from the dentist, and it was just a cleaning.
Okay. Okay. Did they take that thing that they like stretch over your tooth and stretch it over your whole face and body?
What?
You know, like that dental dam, like when they work on like a, just pull it over your whole head. What is the procedure?
I've never had that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, like when you get like, I've got my teeth are horrible. Like it's at my age, and I'm lucky that I don't have dentures, but I would get a root canal and they would like put this thing that would isolate that one tooth. And so the dentist can only work on that one tooth because your mouth is full of this big like shield. It's really annoying. It's just like wondering if you put that on your whole head and face and everything, like down to your waist.
It was just a cleaning. No.
Okay.
They, you know, they did take precautions, you know, and like had to wear a mask in and everything, get whatever. But yeah. But the thing that is interesting about our the dentist. So this is like my family dentist. It's Claggett Dentistry. My dad and my uncle were, and my grandfather were all dentists. They're all retired now. But now my cousin owns it. So I've been there for a long time. I've been going to the same office since I was a kid, and it's really interesting to see how it's changed over the years as technology has changed. Because, you know, it used to be like they would do impressions. They stick the big goopy ball of clay in your mouth and, like, you have to bite on it and it feels super gross and you gag and everything. So I had to get a crown on a tooth, like, I don't know, 6 months ago or something. And I've never had anything like that done. So I go in and instead of doing the big impression with the goo ball in your mouth and all the gross stuff, they have a little tiny scanner, a 3D scanner, this little wand. It's like smaller than a pencil. Stick it in your mouth, spin it around for like 5 seconds, 10 seconds, maybe tops. It's this tiny little 3D scanner. So they stick it in your mouth and wave it around for just a second. And then on the screen next to you, a 3D model, highly detailed 3D model of your entire mouth is built in front of you in seconds. It's not like it has to go off to a machine and, you know, it's just there. So then they have a three-axis mill in the other room.
Is it a Bantam?
A 3D... What?
Is it a Bantam three-axis mill? It's like a new desktop mill that's available.
It's probably like that, but it's made for teeth. So they have this mill in the other room, and the 3D model, they do like a couple minutes of work to remove some part of it, you know, because they're modeling what your tooth, what they're going to put on top of your existing tooth. So they have this model of the nub that's left over of your tooth. Then they create another tooth in 3D to put on top of it. And then this mill just makes you a new tooth. And it takes like 30 minutes. This little block of some sort of resin, ceramic, something or other. And this little machine just... And then it just falls off. And so they walk in with your tooth. And they put some glue in it. And they stick it in your mouth and like knock on it with a little hammer, and they're like, "All right, you're done." It was, and this was a while ago, but it's mind blowing.
That's crazy.
Because like when my dad was a dentist, they would go in, stick the big ball of snot stuff in your mouth. They take the impression, they take it back to the lab, they wait for it to set up, then they make a wax impression of it, then they send that off to a lab, and then they
jeweler company would like make that tooth over.
Yeah,
they'd make a cap. They'd make a cap in sterling silver sometimes, and then they'd put the porcelain tooth over that.
Yep. It was like a whole big ordeal, and now it's... And, you know, they'd send it off, and you'd come back in a week. You'd have, like, this painful thing for a week. Come back, and then they get this thing back from the lab, and they put it in. And now it's... Literally, I was there for an hour, and I got a new tooth.
That's
crazy. Yeah.
Had no idea they were doing that.
The 3D scanner was really cool because it is about the size of a pencil. It's really tiny. And, you know, I kind of assumed, because I'm thinking of 3D scanning something from like a photogrammetry perspective where you have to get all the way around it and you have to, you know, move the camera around the entire object and it takes pictures and it stitches them together. And this thing, it was just like, I don't know how, what it has like LiDAR in it or something. I don't know. They stick this thing in there and they go, zip. And they pull it out, and they're like, okay, cool, yeah, we got that. Now just sit here for a little bit, we'll come back.
Wow.
It's wild. Anyway.
Crazy stuff.
So that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Yeah. It was nice to see everybody.
Anyway, thank you guys for being patient with recording today as I went to the dentist.
Yeah. Well, we would not have been able to record at our normal time anyway. They're putting on a new roof above me, and they just finished this section of the house. So it should be somewhat quiet. There may be a little bit more pounding later on, and I may get called away, but that's what's going on. And by the way, I was not planning on getting a new roof in 2020. So, this is
what happened. Nobody was planning on anything that's happening in 2020. Yeah,
this is not part of the overall strategy of home living. but it was raining in my office a few weeks ago, and it's not supposed to rain inside the house.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
It'll be that's nice wild. To have, though. Like, once you get a new roof, you're like, you feel kind of secure in that, you know.
Here's the issue water in the house for a while. That we are having right now. We, the old roof, it looked fine. We picked out some shingles for the new roof that we thought, that'll look slightly darker. It'll look like we did something when it's all done. I can't tell the new section from the old section. It looks exactly the same, and it's like, oh man, I'm spending this many thousands of dollars for something that's not even going to look different.
Make sure they're not pulling it off the back and putting it on the front. Walk around the house.
Some big scam.
This is why they only pay for like the little section of materials that like they started with.
Like, I can't believe you're giving me a 50% discount. That's amazing. Thank you, guys.
And I also have my shop is a detached garage. And that didn't really need a new roof. And when they were over here a couple weeks ago doing the estimate, they're like, do you want to do that so it looks the same? And we'll do it all. We'll do the detached garage as well. Well, now the detached garage doesn't need to be done because it looks exactly the same, but it's already, they've already have the materials and everything. So, I miss the days of running.
I don't miss that at all.
It's funny when people tell me that they're going to buy a house for the first time and they say, it's only like the mortgage is going to be like, you know, $1,800 a month. I'm like, yeah, that's what you think now. I was like, just assume it's going to be at least twice that every month for some reason or another. You know, it might not all happen every month, but it'll happen at one point where you need to have that much money.
Yep. Yeah, that is the cost to retain ownership. Yeah. That's all that costs.
That's your entry fee. It's to get your foot in the door.
Oh. Yep. I recently put the new metal roof on the machine shop blacksmith area, which I've done some stories on. And it's funny because we did the extension for the blacksmith shop. So it was 20 extra feet on the back, which was never covered. It was just covered with zip board, the green and like burgundy board that you see on new houses, which is okay outside for a little while. Not 2 years, which is how I left it. But considering it wasn't a dwelling, it didn't really matter. It's just to keep the rain off the tools. But then the rest of the old roof was on the proper shop, the original shop. And I finally got an installer to put the metal roofing in. I got metal roofing from like an ad partner, and McElroy was the name of the company. They gave me metal roofing, and I never had anybody to put it in. And when I finally got the guy to put it in, he's like, okay, I'll be there this week. And he just said, make sure the roof is stripped, because I told him, you know, for certain expense, I deal with stripping the roof off. And I'm like, so I'm working all day long, and now it's like, I'm thinking I'm done. It's like 6 o'clock at night, and I'm like, I can relax. And I'm like, oh, the roofer's coming tomorrow. I have to rip the roof off of the garage. I went outside at like 6 o'clock at night with a shovel and a ladder, and I started ripping the roof off of the garage outside, thinking I was going to be done in like a half hour. It took me like 4 hours. Oh. And I didn't finish till midnight, picking up every little scrap of piece of dirt that was outside on the ground. And that was only one half. I only ripped off one half because they were only going to do one half at a time. And then a couple of days later, when they were prepared to do the other side, I hired a couple of friends of mine that like to do this type of stuff in the neighborhood. I couldn't ask them to come the first time because it was literally like, can you come over right now and rip my roof off? I gave them a couple of days notice, and they showed up with a crew and proper garbage removal stuff. And they were done in like 15 minutes because they had 10 guys to do it. It was me alone with a shovel prying up nails. And anyway, I don't recommend anybody promise to rip their roof off and then remember at the very last minute. It's not a good idea.
That sounds terrible. This is only part one of all the stuff that needs to be done. They're going to be back in a few days. I don't know when, probably when we're supposed to record the podcast, to do all new gutters, because right now our gutters just don't work. The water goes right over top of them. Then once that's done, we have more issues. We just, water is the enemy of the homeowner. It's kind of eroded away some of the foundation in the crawl space. So then we got to find a company to come and fix some crawl space issues. And all of this stuff is, the cost of all these repairs is the cost of a small house. And it's insane. Yeah. And when it's all done, I'll feel much better because these things have just been kind of piling up. But there's no visual enjoyment at all. There's nothing I can, like, look at that. That's all done. Now we can enjoy our lives.
The gutters look exactly the same.
They will look exactly the same, yeah.
You can't go swimming in a new roof.
Isn't gutters like a real racket? Like, the guys that do gutters, they like wake me up in my sleep. They're like, hey, can we come over and do an estimate for gutters? We made the mistake of, we were at a trade show, me and Taylor, we were at a horse show where it was all horse equipment, and there was a guy selling gutters for barns. And we made the mistake of giving the guy our email because we were like in a moment thinking we wanted gutters for the house. These guys still call me like once every 15 days. Like, hey, you guys ready for the gutters yet? Is your barn finished yet? You guys ready for gutters yet? I'm like, they're relentless. It's unbelievable.
We have there's like a grounds crew company where they'll mow your lawn and weeds and stuff. And the place is actually called, I shouldn't say this, but it's funny. Their name is Weed Man. Right. Which is, you know, just a play on your local marijuana dealer. But we had them come out for an estimate like 2 years ago, and they call all the time. Like, can we come back out? What do you need done for your landscape? Like, no, we got somebody else to do that. And like,
we're actually selling weed now. Do you want us to come? Yeah.
And I block that number so I don't get that call. And then they call from a different number. It's just,
call. Oh wow.
You have to understand, I've turned you down at least 10 times.
You could do the opposite. So when those people call, you could be like, well, we'll talk about, you know, my yard in just a little bit, but I really need to tell you about my breakfast today. And then you go into this really long,
waste
drawn
their
out
time.
Yeah. Explanation of your, yeah, just like, just keep it going. And they're like, okay, well, we'll call back another time. And I'm like, no, let's talk right now. Let's continue to talk. I'm going to walk you through each one of the blades of grass in my yard, and you can tell me about what to do about each one of the blades of grass in my yard. They'll get annoyed eventually.
I'm done ranting, by the way. This is
what have you been working on? You didn't say that. You were just talking about your roof.
I think last week I mentioned I'm going to do the Bluetooth speaker project, and we actually did not start that. Dan didn't come over because we were taking care of some other things, and so we're actually going to start that this week. And I'm thinking about kind of changing the approach to this. And making like maybe three or four of these little Bluetooth speakers. And I think the point of the video is, don't worry about the science and the technology and just have fun with it. So we're going to throw away the recommended, like, this is what your enclosure needs to be, and this is how acoustics work, and blah, blah, blah. We're going to just let's forget about all that and just have fun. Because I think that is a barrier to getting into a lot of things, and especially like with, you know, knife making or speaker building, anything that like that involves some sort of years of practice can be a barrier to get into that. And like, let's just throw away all that, and just, if it doesn't come out perfect, who cares? We had fun making it. So I think that's going to be the point. So we're going to, I think I'm going to weld up a little metal enclosure for one, and then do another wood one, maybe plywood, and then a clear acrylic one, and just kind of compare and see. And when you're talking about Bluetooth audio, your audio is already degraded from it being probably an MP3. Then it's being degraded because it's Bluetooth and being sent over wirelessly to the speakers. So you're not going to listen to a Bon Jovi record on there and appreciate the hand claps. You know, you're going to use this to listen to podcasts and audiobooks and stuff. So we're going to compare the difference between the different materials and see if there's an audible difference.
Although a future project idea would be to make a specific speaker tuned just for the hand claps on Bon Jovi records. So that, like, pretty much everything else in the bandwidth is just gone away. And that frequency, like, really sticks out. So you, if that's their thing. I'm full of good ideas today.
You are. You are. I'm writing them all down.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, it might be cool, too. Like, I mean, you can just definitely say, you know, forget about the science. That's not what we're worried about. But giving the people who care about that or maybe want to learn more about it some sort of a reference as to, like, if that is something you're, you're into, go check out, you know, Kirby Meets Audio or...
Yeah, for sure.
Somebody, I don't know who else does. Give them a...
That's a great reference. John Hise is also pretty knowledgeable in that speaker stuff, too. The funny thing is, Camera Dan, he's been building speaker enclosures since he started making things. And so he knows a little bit about the science of all that. And so I know part of this project is just going to just irritate him a little bit. But I've already warned him, like, we're going to throw away the science today or on when we record the video. And we'll just concentrate on having fun. But yeah, that is a great source. I did look up, I tried to get a couple books on the subject beforehand so I could kind of flip through it and educate myself and then say, here's a couple references, but I couldn't get the books here in time.
That reminds me, you guys, I talked about Sean Hogan a few times in my early podcast. He usually always would send me over a soundtrack, but his YouTube channel, which is fairly successful, he's got a lot of followers, gets a lot of viral videos. He is an audio engineer and music maker, and he started his channel making suitcase speakers. He'd find suitcases in the garbage and just install a speaker in it. Some Bluetooth, some not so Bluetooth, but yeah, I still have one of his speakers he brought me.
I did this craft show in Cleveland a few years ago, and one of the booths there, this guy made the suitcase speakers, and I was just like, they look so freaking cool.
Yeah, and they have a handle on them. When you're done making them, they have a handle.
Take them wherever you want to go.
Jimmy, what have you been up to? Did you buy any more cars or trucks this week?
Actually, how many cars did you buy since last time?
Let's see. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, I got a car collection going. I didn't buy any cars this week. I did. I made a verbal agreement to buy Chris Zepp's drill press. And then he put the price online. Well, you know what happened? My drill press, we have a drill press where the motor burned out. And I've had it for like 20 years. And the drill press, the motor's burnt. And we need to either get a new motor. But it was a drill press that I didn't really use that much. So I'm going to give that to Mike, the fireman. He's going to take it and fix it. And then I'm going to get Chris's drill press. So, like, sticking to that rule of if I get a new tool, you know, an old tool has to go out. If it's a redundant tool, if it's something new, it's new. But if it's a redundant thing, it has to replace something. That's kind of my reasoning. So I don't end up having like a wall full of drill presses and I only really need one, possibly two. Because there are moments where Taylor will set up a drill press for doing an operation on her chairs, and she asks everyone to leave it set up for a while, and so we need like an alternate. Okay, besides that, I made my barbecue apron. Did you guys see that stupid thing I made?
And I didn't watch the video, but I definitely saw the thing.
Yeah,
the stupid thing.
Yeah, you got it. This is a stupid thing. But I was asked by Weaver to come up with to make a barbecue thing. Maybe a holster or a thing for tools. Just make a barbecue thing. Connor just said, come up with some kind of fun barbecue thing. And I was a little like, against the wall. I'm like, oh, what am I going to make? A thing that like hangs on your waist and you clip your tools on? Like, it's kind of hokey. It's like not practical. And then I was like, well, you know what? Let me make an apron. Because every time I Googled barbecue holster to see what would show up, aprons would show up. And they were hokey. Everyone was hokey. They'd have like a bandolier of hot sauces or something really stupid. And that gave me the license to just be stupid. And when I had the breakthrough of the idea of the metal, I made this metal hook, which hooks on your shoulders. I'm like, this is going to get the trolls insane. This is like kicking a hornet's nest by like taking something that's been notably traditional for 1,000 years. You take an apron, you put belts on it, and you hang the belts off your neck or your shoulders. And the reason I never like wearing a vest is because it's always difficult for me to put on and off, because I usually have a headset on, glasses, hat. I always got to pull things over my head. I can't stand that. So I never wear a vest. I'm like, you know what? I'll just ruin the shirt today. Who cares? I never wear an apron. So I thought if I had an apron, I could just kind of walk into and then walk out of. Like, imagine walking into your shop and just, you know, like walking right through like a walking through like a frame, and then you have an apron on, and then when you leave, you walk through that frame backwards, and the apron's off. You know, that's where you go like full extreme for your inventing. You come up with some crazy, you know, Wallace and Gromit stuff, and then you take it back a little bit. So that was my thought process of like, once I had the metal hooks, I'm like, all right, cool. This, and so I actually called my friend over at Weaver, and I was like, try to manipulate the conversation. He's going to hear this and laugh. Try to like, hey, I made this cool apron idea. Can we like, maybe it's a great idea for a regular shop apron. He's like, yeah, let's stick with the barbecue thing. That's great. And I'm like, oh, okay. I like to barbecue it. And I welded all the hooks on it and I put the tools on it. That was my idea to begin with, but I was really going to make the tools. So like you wear this metal harness, the leather hangs off the harness. I did a lot of leather techniques, but I wanted to make a thing where the tools would kind of firmly stay in place, like where you can kind of twist lock them into place. So when you move, they stay in shape with your body. They don't dangle. But I was like, you know what? This is so hokey. Let me just make them dangle. It'll make a laugh. I figured like the motion would look funny. And anyway, I followed through with the video. The video did okay. You know, I think I'm in algorithms. I think his office chair is on my hose right now. I think that's what's going on in the basement of YouTube. Remember our friend Algorithm, the guy that walks around and opens up faucets and closes
them? Is he really our friend?
Yeah, like sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
He was in the beginning of this year for me. Yeah. But I think he rolled his office chair and the wheel is like halfway on my tube. So someone's got to make a phone call or something. I'll go down there. Maybe he's sleeping. He hasn't moved his office chair. But yeah, no, so things have slowed down a little bit, but that's not going to slow me down. I'm going to keep making videos. And so now I did that. That was fun. And now I'm doing another leather video. So now it's going to be, what is this channel? The leather channel now. So I'm working on a leather video for this weekend. This is now, I am now the leather channel. I'm making beer cozies for Carolina's shoe video. So that's been fun. I get to work with Taylor a little bit on this one. She helped me sew. But I'm making 50 beer cozies out of leather, and I'm going to wet form them. Today I just went and bought like 4 cases of soda so that I could wet form each one of the leather cozies on a can, and then I got to let them dry for a day and then pull them out of it. So that's my day is going to consist of wet forming. And you want to know something funny? And this is to every, this is another thing. So I've been working with the woman, Christine. This is just a cautionary tale to everybody. Christine, who's been helping me develop my clothing line, is opening up a very big branded store in New York. She's like the managing director of all the trades, getting the store set up, marketing and everything. And the company is based in England. It's their first American store. So they hired CNC interior designers and operators in England. And they made pegboard for one big giant display. So they made pegboard, and the operator who designed the pegboard at Illustrator, whoever it was, just made up random pegboard size. They just said, oh, this looks like a good grid. And made pegboard. Now it's the featured item in the store. It's like 6 panels of pegboard. And the pegs for them don't exist because that person didn't take the time to be like, okay, let me make it to this standard peg that's in retail. Let me make it to that standard peg that's at retail, whether it's European standard or American. They just decided to just make pegboard, scaled it to what looked cool, and then CNC'd it, laser cut these pegboards. The pegs don't exist. So guess who's making 40 pegs today just for the grand opening for tomorrow?
Oh.
So we started making them yesterday. When I'm done with this, we got to go TIG weld, you know, more 40 claws to 40 pegs. So that's all. It's just, so I said, you guys have like a wall that needs these pegs. You're going to either redo the pegboard, which I think you should do, or I'm not making 140 of these. I'm just making these 40 just to get them through this opening because they have some featured things they need to hang up. So if you're a CNC operator and you're going to make something that's like a typical standard, Make sure it is a standard, not just a you know, an emotional design. It needs to really fit the rest of, you know, whatever systems are in place for that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Apple.
There you go.
With your lightning cable.
Yeah, Apple. Did you guys, I'll say this one last thing because you reminded me, it's so funny. I bought these cables that have these multiples on them. I'm holding them up. It has one cable that goes to like a block and 4 things come out of it for all the different devices you have. And it's got them on Amazon. I got like 10 of them for different spots around the house. And you know, 50% of them work. It's funny, this comedian, I wish I could remember his name. He goes, I'm going to do an imitation of an Apple, of a off-brand iPhone plug. And it's like, hey, yeah, I'm really sexy. I look so good. Oh, man, I'm so happy you bought me. Oh, really nice. And I don't work. And that's the impression. I'm doing it the way he did it. But he did this little build-up, and he goes, and I don't work. And that's how the joke ends. And it's exactly right. It's so true. If you don't buy an Apple cable, it does not work.
You go to like the gas station and you're like, oh, sweet, chargers for my phone. And they're $5. Totally. Get one of these. And it'll charge it one time. And that's $5 worth of charging. Bob. Let's see. For me, okay. So you know how we've talked about several times the R2-D2 model and making the shadow box for the model?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The whole idea?
Yeah.
It's done. And
yeah,
I think it looks really cool.
It does look really cool.
Happy with it.
That's really cool. Is that going to be a video?
Yeah, that's the video that's coming out. It'll be out before this show's out. I hope it should be. But yeah, that turned out to be a lot of fun to, like, after we talked about it, I went with the idea of making the box, rather than making a real world box to display a science fiction thing, we went with the approach of, what if this was like a specimen box? Like somebody in the Star Wars universe found this thing, this model of like maybe a production facility or whatever, and they made a specimen box for that thing to kind of keep it intact. You know, as if you like caught an alien or something, you make this box to hold it. So kind of went with that approach. And so the box itself has a little bit of a sci-fi vibe to it. And we put like a fake control panel on the front with some buttons and weathered it and stuff. And I'm really happy with it. I think it turned out cool. I had planned on putting some LEDs on the inside of it so that it would have its own kind of internal light. And I just didn't plan. I planned for it, but then when it all came down to it, I just didn't plan correctly for it. And so there's not actually room to put the LEDs evenly around. Like you could put them in certain places, but you'd end up with hot spots of light in this big box, and it wouldn't look good. So I mentioned it in the video, but we just kind of like left the lights out of it. But that would have really taken it to the next level to have the buttons light up and have, you know, the kind of internal glow to it. So I may try to come up with a way to do that at some point. But either way, I think it looks good. And I'm pretty happy to have that one done. It's kind of a nice diversion from the, you know, building furniture and cabinets and stuff like that we typically do.
One of the I can tell when one of us is really excited about the project we just finished because we'll share it within, like, we'll text each other. Like, yeah. I was really excited about the walnut chair that I made, and I love it. And I'm like, you guys, take a look at this. And it's like a little brag moment for me. And then Bob shared this project, and I was like, this is so cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are the first to know when I'm really super excited about something.
Yeah.
That's true. It's funny.
So that's kind of what I've been doing. Right now we're working on rebuilding the paint booth, actually, for next week, and kind of came up with some different ways. I've been using the paint booth that I built for about 2 years now, I think. And so, you know, it was time to kind of do some maintenance on it. And then that gave me the reason to break it down and just rebuild it and do it a little bit better and add some features and stuff. So that's what I've been working on this week. But it dawned on me over the past few days that, like, the R2-D2 box, we finished on, I guess I finished putting it together on Friday, and it's for this Thursday. And so now we're working on this paint booth for next Thursday. And it's weird because I remember a time not too long ago where I was like 3 or 4 weeks ahead in projects, and I just felt like it's really nice to be working on something that's going to be down the road, and we have content lined up. And it's weird now to be back to, I'm doing something right now for almost immediate release, just because that we got into the pattern of having this lead time, and it's not stressful or anything.
The beginning.
Well, I know. And that's kind of why I was thinking about it, is because you guys both tend to like do a thing and immediately put it out as soon as it's done. And I've always had the preference. It's not always worked out this way, but I always had the preference to like build up a lead, you know, and just be working at a consistent rate and releasing at a consistent rate, and there being a gap in between those two things, so that if something needed to have a little more time or a little extra, you know, a little less time, there was some fluctuation there. And so it's strange for me to be back in the place where I'm like doing something just quickly enough to get it out. But I'm trying to be okay with it and not be stressed about it.
It's a mental game for me with the projects, because I've been ahead, and what happens is when I'm working on a project, I am all in. That's all I think about that particular week. And then when I'm done, I'm happy with it and I want to show it off, and I get to do that right away. And when I would find myself getting ahead where like this project has been done for 2 weeks, now I'm finally releasing the video, I'm no longer excited about it. I've already detached myself from that project, and I don't even feel like promoting it or, you know, tweeting about it.
It's funny. A couple weeks ago, Taylor saw me stressing out trying to get something done under the wire. You know, I'm trying to hit every Sunday morning these days. And she's like, why don't you just like make a whole bunch of videos at once so you're not stressing out? I was like, wait a minute. I don't have enough time to make the one video. How do you expect me to make a whole bunch at once? She's like, she looked up at the sky and thought for a minute. She's like, well, okay. I'm not sure, but you just got to figure it out. You just got to figure it out. I'm like, what I need to do is put the entire world on pause, work for 3 weeks, and then I'll be 3 weeks ahead, and then I could start the world again. That's the only way.
Well, you know, so there's, I mean, obviously you're joking, but there's something to be said for that, for taking a break from release now and just putting in the work to be able to have that buffer. I'm not saying it's a good idea or a bad idea, but like that is absolutely an option, especially if you look at the year and you take a time of year where, you know, like ads don't perform as well, people don't watch as much. January is terrible. Like I would be fine to not release a video in January ever again, because
Mark Roper does one video a month, right? That's it. That's his schedule. Well,
yeah, but every one of his videos gets like 50 billion views. I mean,
but I'm saying that's a smart way to look at it. I mean, I don't think I can live up to that pattern. I probably should, because I'm getting a lot more like custom work, you know, behind the scenes. But the idea of like putting like 3 or 4 good weeks into a really substantial video is a great production schedule, and it obviously works for him. You know, I've always considered, you know, switching up. But now, like going into the, you know, these going in, I have two. I'm going into two television projects, so that's and I'm making more Woody trailers. I committed to that yesterday. We got to make.
Wow.
I don't even want to tell you how many more Woody trailers I have to make.
Do you know how to say no?
No, I don't think so. I really don't.
Wait, you just did. I don't know if you realize that.
No, I don't know how to say no. But, you know, this is the thing. I've had this conversation with Taylor. Like, these Woody trailer orders came in, and they want, like, tens and tens and tens of them. I might split the order with another fabricator. So I only have to do half as many as they want. They're asking for 55. They want 55 more Woody trailers. And, you know, it's a lot of money. And I said to Taylor, I go, if I say no to this and I pass it off and they find another fabricator that could do it, I would have to train that fabricator either through Zoom or whatever, give them my files. And then you turn around and, you know, the television production decides to pull it, or, you know, the main guy gets COVID and then all of a sudden, like, the show's on hold. Now I have nothing to do going into October, November. And then I'm also supposed to do NBC in October, November. What if that gets pushed off? Because it's been, I was supposed to be done with that by now. I was supposed to shoot in May. So it keeps getting pushed off. So what if I say no to that? And then, you know, the world changes and all of a sudden I don't have anything to do. And I just passed on, you know, nearly more than $250,000 worth of work.
Because and then they come back because they want even more trailers, and they just bypass you and they go to that secondary
manufacturer. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's why, you know, this is, it's a tough decision, but, you know, my team here and, you know, my loyal guys that work here with me, of course, Aaron and Mike, and there's a few other guys that aren't too public. They're like, let's do it. We'll figure it out. You know, and they're even, cause the guys I'm making them for are also very capable. They have a full on shop, but they're mostly like on the road. They don't really stay in the shop, but they even said, hey, how about a compromise is you just make all the parts on your CNC machine. We'll watch one of your videos and, you know, you assemble one. I've changed the design from the original video a lot to make it easier to put together and lighter, less material. That first video I made, where I made 5 of them, I was able to extract 20% of the material out of it and do most of it on the CNC machine. So I've been doing a little bit of stories on it. So, and the next batch is going to even be a little bit more refined, because once we start realizing that this thing doesn't have to be a real trailer, it's really more of like a, you know, cardboard display, but upscaled from a cardboard display. How can we make them lighter, faster, quicker, more efficient. And then, you know, the number is the number. So as a producer, designer, builder, I have to figure out how to extract, you know, when I say the number, the solid price, it's all they're willing to pay me just this number. And the more money I save on my end, the more profit I could make on it by extracting less, more and more material out of the original design. So.
So as you're doing this, I mean, is it an option or would it be beneficial in any way to maybe add another CNC machine to the mix? Obviously, that's going to eat into your profit considerably.
No. Absolutely. You know, absolutely. You know, and this is one of those opportunities where I'm like, okay, should I buy another CNC machine? I've already talked with Derek's got a 4x8. Derek's going to make some of the parts and because he's got a 4x8 and he and I have been going to be working on this new project together. So we'll be going back and forth from the Boston area to here. So it's not out of the question to, you know, have 50 sheets of plywood dropped off at his house and he just makes a certain aspect of it where I'm over here making a different part of it. And, you know, just a truck drive a few hours apart, all of a sudden we have, you know, a large majority of it assembled. And then I'm talking to my other partners. I might just split the order in half, let them handle this. Literally just, you just take it. So I don't have as much to worry about. And then the client's getting stuff delivered from both of us. So it's happening, you know, that much faster. But to say no and be like, you know what, I got this other thing, you know, that's another thing too. I mean, as an example to the listeners, like I have this bird in the hand, but you know, these two TV productions, they might go away. You know, a lot of people like get enamored with the idea of like, oh, TV is going to be great and fun. This time of COVID, everything is just so up in the air. I don't want to say no to one and then lose the other two. And then all of a sudden, have nothing to do, you know, going into fall. But, and it's a challenge, you know, it's like, it's fun. It's a fun thing to do. It's like,
it's hard to say no to anything. Cause that you, for me, it's like, how long am I going to be able to do this? You know, am I doing this for the rest of my life? Maybe this opportunity is not going to be here. So it's yes to all these different opportunities to make sure I can still buy dog food for the puppies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Buy a lot of dog food with 55 trailers.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, you will be seeing them. I'm sure I basically committed to my man yesterday. It's like, all right, let's figure this out. Even if it just gets down to like, you know what, we're running out of time. I'm going to send you guys the parts to assemble it. You guys do it there. And a big thing, I mean, this is a technical thing. A big, big, big part of this is everything is over 5 feet. The skin on the door, the moving door, is 60 by like 58. And we just realized that my supplier will sell us a minimum order of 50 sheets of 10 by 5 foot skinning material. We're going to use like the hardboard, like the dark brown hardboard. That will save a tremendous amount of time because I don't have to piece it together on a curved surface, which is just about a nightmare. This trying to curve pieces on an inside curve and an outside curve in segments because it has to be, you know, I have to span. And then I end up every sheet of 4x8 because it's everything's 5 feet. I end up with all this 3 foot waste that I just, you know, I end up like trying to scatter it into the project, but it just ends up being clumsy. So the scale of the project is also just clumsy and inconvenient. But for those particular applications, we're going to buy 5x10 material going forward, which I should have sourced in the beginning. I wasn't thinking. Because I was getting some stuff from my supplier, some stuff from Home Depot. So, whatever.
Well, and you live and weren't learn. Expecting to have to keep doing these, right? I mean, initially this was just like, here, do a handful of these things.
Exactly. Yeah. So now that, you know, and that's the other thing is like, you know, seeing how we can live up to the challenge, you know, with Aaron's sourcing capabilities and, you know, me just constantly refining the design and changing the CNC files constantly. Came up with a new idea yesterday where, and I directly stole it from seeing some cheap furniture. I'm going to CNC pockets so the shelves will come together into the pockets. But on the back side, because there's a lot of negative space that nobody sees, I'm going to also CNC wedges so that I can just get shims, the ones that you would like hold your furniture up with in the house. Just buy those from the store, cut them in half, and use those shims to tighten the shelves into place. But have the pocket and the CNC already integrated into the thing, because the second round I made the perfect slot for the perfect edge of the shelf, and we're trying to bang them in, you know, like if you don't do an offset of like, you know, 4,000ths, the exact same width of the plywood, the exact same width of the hole, you find yourself hammering things in all the time. So I'm going to make it intentionally loose with those wedges, just squirt some glue in there, hammer in the wedges, and then we're done. So these type of things, you know, you can't think of them until you realize, you know, what you should have done. And so having the opportunity to reiterate and reiterate is, you know, just gets better and better. So, All right, that's our show, everybody. Sorry.
So like with this, I mean, you know, you don't have to answer this. You may not even have an answer for it, but over the next, like the rest of this year, that's a huge amount of work and you're going to part some of it out. You have two baseball games that you're a part of. How are you going to make videos? Are you planning on just taking...
You don't even make videos anymore.
I mean, are you planning on just like putting the video stuff aside while you're doing in those little
seasons? No, I'm going to still... I have to do the guitar build-off next week. Week after that, I have to make gates for the property, which is a Lincoln video. And then I have one other... Oh, I have a video for a knife build, which is easy. This gets to the kind of the topic of what I was talking about before we started. And the topic is how deep something is, how much gravity something has. And I kind of talked about it in two parts. Part one is learning, the intimidation factor of learning, say, for instance, CNC. I was having a conversation with a friend, and he said, remember when you were so intimidated by CNC laser cutting? Specifically, and he goes, now you realize all it is two things. And he's 100% right. And like the idea of me being afraid to even learn how to use the ShopBot for the very first time because I was afraid the learning was too deep. And it was intimidating because, like, how much do I really need to know? And I trained myself into like just getting into, okay, just teach me this much and then let me see what I could do with that. And then when I feel comfortable going a little deeper, I go, and then all of a sudden you realize you've reached the end of the road and you're like, that's all I was afraid of, was those things. Mm. So it's the same thing. So I apply that same concept to when you're thinking of something to make for a client, for instance. I have limited amount of time. What's the most impactful thing I could make with this amount of time that's not going to be, you know, the doors to the barn, for instance, which were like a week-long work with JD, and we worked all day long every day to get that done because he had to fly back home. So that's like a super deep, thick project versus like a barbecue apron. And to me, like the meat is something that's a little bit more like inventive. Like the meat of the barbecue project was the hook on the shoulder. So for me, I felt like, you know, and some of these are home runs, you know, when it comes to rating, some of them aren't, but you live and learn and there's really nothing you can do about it. You don't know what's going to be anything. You know, some viral videos are like, and this one didn't do well. You really can't, you know, if you'll drive yourself crazy if you're trying to figure that stuff out. But the depth of something or the thickness of the learning or the thickness of the project, and you ask me, can I do all these other things at the same time? And if I make them into digestible, thick enough, thin enough versions of what it is. If I had all the time in the world, I'd make these garden gates. They're going to be incredible. But I only have this much time, so I'm going to plasma cut shapes and all you do is CNC stuff. Yeah, because it happens quick. So that the idea.
I had a conversation with my kids yesterday because they started online school yesterday, and they ended up wasting a fair amount of their time goofing off in between their class assignments. And then my youngest, and it's new to them and everything, but they got to the end of the day and we were eating dinner late. It was like 7:30. We're sitting down to eat. My youngest still doesn't have his school finished. And I got out a whiteboard and I drew it while we were eating. And I said, you know, this side over here is when you wake up. This side over here is when you go to bed. This board is the day that you have. And I started drawing boxes and I was like, you have a box for breakfast, you have one for dinner, you have one for school, you have one for chores, and they all take up a certain amount of space. And the leftover space on this board is yours to do with whatever you want. But this other stuff has to happen.
Yeah.
And I was trying to visually show them that, like, you can put your effort and your time wherever you want it to, but these boxes have to be done. And so, like, if you can figure out how to make those boxes smaller by doing those things quicker, which is just what you're saying, like, go to the CNC to get this thing done because you can get it done quicker, and that leaves you more time in the same 24 hours that everybody else has to be able to do the next thing, the thing that you want to do, going on the bike rides and playing with your friends. Like, that only fits if the other stuff is done. And it was, like, the first time I was able to actually show them something in front of them and be like, We don't have all the time in the world. This is your limit, and you got to figure out how to schedule this stuff within here.
I think this is why there are so many marketing books and so many marketing programs and seminars and everything, because it's that depth is the roadblock for a lot of people. It's like learning the new CNC. Well, if to do the CNC, I got to learn how to use Illustrator or some vector program, and to do that, I got to whatever. And you put all these blocks up, but the best teachers in the world remove all that and simplify it. Like if you wanted to learn how to play trumpet, that sounds, if you don't have a starting point, you're like, that's going to take years of practice. But a good teacher will say, these are the two things that you need to know right now to get you to point B. Focus on these. And so that's, being a good teacher is an art. And that is just why there is marketing books and seminars and programs will never stop, because everybody has a new way to teach something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think Jimmy said similar things a lot of times, in that like about the two necessary parts, where, you know, you want to learn CNC as a whole, but you don't actually have to know everything about CNC to use a CNC. You just have to know the first parts to make the first cut. Yeah. And then from there, and it's what I'm doing with TIG welding right now. It's just, I'm taking your advice. You know, you don't have to know how to TIG weld everything in every situation and every setting and every thickness and everything.
That's where it comes overwhelming.
You just have to know. Yeah. And that's why I've never done it, because that is totally overwhelming to me. I'm not going to get it all. I don't even know what to look up. I don't even know where to go. But I know how to look up one small thing, you know, like eighth inch material, aluminum, tack welds. The bare minimum that I could do.
Right.
And so like the other day I spent time on that. Mm-hmm. And instead of having months of being intimidated and being like, well, I just don't even know how to start, I spent like an hour practicing tack welds, and now I can tack weld aluminum and it's not terrible and it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, a lot of times Jimmy will talk about being overwhelmed with the overall like potential knowledge, which is exciting, but it is overwhelming. And I think, just like you're saying, David, pick the bare minimum for step one, learn step one. Then you do bare minimum for step two. And then you just keep doing that. And then you look back and you're 25 steps down the road and you're like, oh, it turns out I do know fusion. Turns out I do know CNC. Turns out I do know whatever. You know?
The idea for my Bluetooth speaker box that I have was like, just remove the science and remove the acoustics and just have fun. It came from, I subscribe to this learning platform called Masterclass, and it's like $100 a year, and it's really, really good. Hashtag not sponsored, but there's a one of the, and it's everything. There's like learn how to play guitar. There's how to write a movie and score a movie, and just all these different things. How to cook. Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine. That's a callback to last week's episode. He has a class on how to play guitar. And the whole first half of the class, like the first 5, 6, 7, 8 little lessons, has nothing to do with music at all. It's just about making noise on the guitar and like how he does it and how you do it, how you can find your voice. That way you don't have to worry about all the skill. You can just go and you can have fun with these things. Now that you're having fun, let's throw in some technique. Let's throw in some exercises and add skill to it. And it was, I was just blown away by how his lesson works on this masterclass. It's really well done.
That reminds me of something. You totally reminded me. When I was at School of Visual Arts in the 80s, there was a teacher named Frank Young, who's still alive, and we became friendly over the years. Unfortunately, I never did take his class, but we became friendly because I began to teach there, and we started meeting, and we realized we had a couple of mutual friends. But when I was a student in like year two, I would see like these pockets of students with Frank, because he looked like Frank Zappa. So he stood out. Like he looked just like Frank Zappa, tall, really long hair and a ponytail, mustache and a little beard. And he would be like on 23rd Street, and his students would be like standing in a line, like facing a building. And that's his graphic design class. Or like in the teachers all had the opportunity to get like the showcases in one hallway. Whenever it was his showcase, it wasn't just like images of the work that the students had done. I remember one year he had all the students do a grid of Wonder Bread, real Wonder Bread with real push pins. The whole case was just full of Wonder Bread with push pins through the Wonder Bread holding the in a grid. And then the thing was to see how it deteriorated over the month. And I remember by the end of the month, all the bread was at the bottom and all the push pins had like little crumbs on them. So he basically took completely away from graphic design to basically free up people's thinking. He would also make people meditate. And I had some of his students, they'd be like, you know, I had other his students in my other classes when I was a co-student with them, and they'd be like, oh, all this guy makes us do is meditate. This is ridiculous. You know, and there were other students that were like, I love this guy. You know, so he like didn't care what people thought of him, but his teaching concept was to just like free your mind and like do the unexpected. And again, I wish I had taken his class. I got to know him, so I understand his philosophy better than I did when I was a student. But that reminds me of what you're doing. It kind of frees you up to be able to take, to bring it back, the depth of whatever it is you're getting into, and be a little bit more open instead of being rigid and uptight and tense about, oh, where's the end of this pit that I'm about to step into? And for me today, it's going to be, I'm learning how to use a rotary index on my ShopBot. ShopBot sent over rotary index. And yesterday I was on a Skype call, a Zoom call for like 2.5 hours, setting it up and zeroing it. And Brian over at ShopBot was amazing. He was so patient with me. And it actually worked out a lot better than I think both of us expected, because Aaron was holding the camera for me. Sometimes I was holding it for him, and I was at the keyboard and Aaron was at the indexing head, you know, doing zeroing and getting everything trammed. So today we're going to actually do a training lesson on how to cut something. So, but thinking of the indexing head and not finding too much good information on it, how to take a file from one program to a CNC program. And, you know, so today I'm expecting to demystify a lot of that. Do either of you guys have experience with an indexing head?
No. I do not know.
Yeah. That's one of those things that I would absolutely feel the same way about. Like, I don't know anything about it. I don't know what I don't know, and I don't know where to start.
Well, thankfully, I mean, I told the guys over at ShopBot that, you know, I had this opportunity for potential TV show shooting here, and that if they wanted, I wanted to be able to have it as, you know, just, I want the arsenal to be as full as possible. So when, you know, we get to make the strangest thing, I'd be like, we could make that. You know, we could put that on the CNC indexing head. Also, because getting back into like the depth of knowledge or the thickness of a project, we have like a week at a time to make things. That's the schedule. That's what the shooting schedule is going to be. So I'm not going to, like, we could use the lathe, but I could also just design it on the thing and have the CNC making it while we go do something else. And we could, you know, fold time back on itself and get more done, more thicker projects done with less time. So I'm thinking around. That's why I bought that drill press from Chris, because I'm going to put it in a different section where it's like, hey, we need to drill this. Okay, run over to that other shop and drill it, because there's a better drill press there or here or whatever. So anyway, that's it. That's my idea. The intimidation factor, basically how deep is the pool you're about to step into. And then when you step into it and you realize it only goes up to your knees, you're like, that's what I was worried about.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, same thing. I was talking about the DRO last week, you know, installing it and screwing it up. And so I don't remember what I told you guys, but I shipped the pieces that I had that were the wrong size. I had just gotten the wrong size. Sent them back. The guy called me to say that he got them, and then was like, tell me about your machine. So I told him what the machine was, and he was like, oh, yeah, you actually need this, and you need this, and you need this instead. I'm going to ship these out to you. Do you have the manual? And I'm like, no, I don't. There's a manual? I don't have a manual to put this thing together. He's like, oh, yeah, well, I'll send you the manual. And then if you start installing it and you have any trouble, just let me know. And so it's funny, because a couple of weeks ago, I tried to do this thing by myself, not really knowing where to start, not knowing whatever, and I messed it up. And just through messing something up, I was able to have a conversation with this guy. Now I understand it more. Now I have better resource coming. And so, you know, when they arrive, I'm going to have everything I know and the experience of screwing it up as a starting point to be able to do it the correct way. And so I'm not as intimidated. And I guess my point with that is that even the deep things that do have a lot of depth to them, which I don't think installing this has a lot of depth to it, but even those things, dipping your toe in and then realizing that the water is cold at least lets you know that the water's cold. And then you can like decide how you want to move forward. And like, it took me 6 months to finally try that thing to then screw it up. But at least now I know what I screwed up, and I know what not to do this next time I install it. So I think that's, you know, I tend to not want to jump into something until I have a pretty good grasp on it sometimes. And like that backfires, you know, that stops you from giving something a shot. And this was one of those cases where I just like finally gave it a shot. And the TIG stuff for me is kind of doing the same thing. Like I did it and it was pretty terrible. And then I understood what I needed to be looking for. So then I knew the research I needed to do. And I've been practicing, intentionally practicing TIG welding, which is not, I don't practice anything. It's like I do something for a video and then I move on to the next thing. And I just, you know, next time I have to make a video about that thing, I'll do it again. But I spent the other day like just practicing TIG and trying to understand how much heat I was putting into the piece and what that was doing to the piece. And it felt really good to like explore something, test something, see the result and be like, oh, okay, so I need to do it this way. And then I would practice that and then like see the improvement. And it felt really, really good. And I'm just, again, dipping my toe into tack welding. Like there's so much more. And there's, I have so far to go before I can even claim to be able to barely do it. But I don't know. It feels good to take things like that that I've been putting off for so long, just like Jimmy's saying, and because I feel like they're too big, and finally start to get in and, you know, dig at them a little bit. And before too long, R2-D2 is going to have TIG welded feet. And they're going to be done.
I think it's why a lot of woodworkers start off building shop furniture, because it's not a finished piece that you're going to try to sell, and it doesn't even have to look good. It just has to function, and it's a great way to get to know your tools, to dip your toes in the water and understand how things work.
Yeah.
And me declaring this and talking about it today, next week something's going to come up and I'm going to be like, oh, I don't want to do that. That seems like it's too much learning. I still have that voice in my head.
Yeah.
And I have to like take a couple days, and then the other voice in my head will be like, well, now this is a good opportunity. Challenge yourself. Learn something new. And then I'll be like, no, I don't want to learn something new. I have too many things to do. And then that's the internal struggle. It just, you got to just constantly, you know, fight. So I say that because I don't want people to think that I've like come to the end of the road and I'm like, everything is knowledge. It's still a struggle. I still got to remind myself.
That voice never goes away. It's like whack-a-mole. You might knock it down, but it's going to peek its head back out in another hole eventually. And then you just have to just use what you've learned before to knock it back down again.
Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts on this? Take the silence as no.
I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to suggest.
Okay. Well, let me thank our Patreon supporters. Big thanks to everybody that helps us out over on Patreon. Everybody gets the after show, no matter what level you support us at. But our top supporters are Albers Woodworks, Blondie Hacks, You Can Make This Too, Chad from Mancrafting, Corey Ward, Maker in Training, Odin Leather Goods, Funkiss Artistic Creations, Rich at Low End Designs, and Works by Solo. I'll put Bernie at Works by Solo last because he's my recommendation. Thank you, David, for reminding me that this was going to be my recommendation. Bernie did something crazy and something maybe dangerous. I don't know. I think he did it in a safe way, but just inherently there's some danger to it. He took a circular saw and put it on a CNC machine and got it to work. There's a few things about this video that got me really excited. One, I mean, Bernie's awesome. He's a great guy. So it's cool to see him doing crazy stuff. stop it.
I'm looking at my phone, sir.
Bernie's cool. Also, just the fact that he had an idea that I've never seen anywhere else, and he figured out how to make it work, and it's a tool modification specifically to do a job that is part of a project. So it's not like he's just like, hey, you know what we should do? Stick a this to a that. It's not one of those. It's he needs to make a certain type of thing. Having a CNC-controlled circular saw was a good way to do that. So he, you know, solving a problem like that. The other thing that was really cool is that he made this mounting plate, and he made it on his Bridgeport. And he got a Bridgeport around the same time as I did, but I've not really done anything with mine yet. because again, I feel like the water's too deep and I just haven't really started there yet. Oh. He's jumped into it and he put a DRO on his machine and had in that video showed him using the DRO to effectively make a plate that has like holes from the through hole from both sides with counterbores and all this stuff. And then like, I guess it's not a complicated part, but it was just cool to see somebody who started in the same kind of place that I did and has already like leapfrogged past me, but has done, you know, a functional part. He had an idea, he drew it out, and he made it on the Bridgeport, and now it's in place. I know people do that all the time. I mean, I've watched Jimmy use the Bridgeport 1,000 times, but I don't know. It was just encouraging to me to see like he had an idea and totally executed it with the exact same stuff that I'm going to have here very soon. And it's one more of those check boxes in my head, like, oh, well, this is not an excuse anymore. Like, you don't have that reason to, you've seen it work, jump in, do the thing. So one of my that was encouraging to me.
Favorite things is the side effects of this tool that he basically built. I think, if I remember correctly, he wanted to make a bunch of repeating straight lines, and that's where the saw blade comes in handy. Am I correct? Is that, but when you turn the blade and you use that blade as like kind of like a gouge, and then you go up and down with the CNC, it created these really, really cool repeating patterns that as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I want to do that. That looks so cool. Yeah. It's like when you, those angle jigs really, that you see people over the table saw where you run the board, you have the blade sticking up like a 16th of an inch and you run the board at an angle through it and it creates this cool little cove in there. He was doing that with the CNC and that was phenomenal. And that just opens up the doors to so many other cool things. And I think he teased something at the end of the video where he showed this like bendy wood thing that he'd like who's going to be the first CNC manufacturer to release this tool, right? Because it has, if you can find a safe way to do it, because there are dangers in there, that it can become a great little thing to have in your arsenal.
But I could definitely see it being modified. You know, obviously he's taking an off the shelf saw and sticking it on there, but taking the spinning blade and covering it except for the part that actually does the cutting, you know, more completely than is, you know, out of the store, is totally doable. I could definitely see that being an attachment, because you're right. Yeah. The crazy 3D sculpting type thing that he was doing with it is super cool. I don't even know how you would program that. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing. But yeah, it worked. It was really, really cool. So go check that video out. Good job, Bernie. That's what I got.
Oh, did I have to do one? I got one. And it's, I just went through my subscription and I tried to find somebody that I watched who I never really think about. But Kai, you know Kai W? Does camera reviews from Hong Kong? You know?
No. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I do.
800. Yeah. He's got the really like, he's got like a DJ voice from England. He's like, talks like this. He's got a really deep voice with an English accent. And he does like a deep dive. He's like, who's the guy that always hangs out with Casey Neistat that does a lot of technology reviews? Can't remember his name. Anyway, he's like him, but just a lot of camera equipment stuff. His recent one is the DJ Osmo iPhone gimbal. So Kai, K-A-I, last initial W.
Cool.
Looking for good camera stuff.
My pick, I actually tweeted this the other day, and then later on in the day, my wife let me know that I had a spelling error in my tweet. And so I took the tweet down. We were watching a movie, and I never put it back up. So if you saw the tweet, and then I'm like, where did that tweet go? It's because I'm a moron. But mine is called Peek Inside New York City's Iconic Rubber Stamp Shop. And it's just a cool little well-shot artsy video. It's only like 3.5 minutes long of this rubber stamp shop in New York City. And it just... you appreciate the art form and the work.
I heard of that place. I've never been there. I got to go check that out. I got to check out that video.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Cool. Yeah, I guess that's it. You guys got anything else?
No, that's
not this week. Okay. The pigeon says no, so... Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us, and
thank you.
See you next time.
Later.
You got to make sure R2-D2 knows how to say the word I love you.
Oh, yeah. We can make that happen. I need to get a recording of you saying it and put that in there as one of the buttons. Because people constantly ask me about you having your sound effects in R2-D2. Like, it's still a thing. So we really need to make that happen.
I'll do them all.
Bleep blop. I'm R2-D2. With, like, a New York...
Get out of my way. Trying to cross here.
I'm walking
I'm rolling
here.
I'm rolling here.
Anyway. All right.
See you guys.
Bye.
Later.
Rolling here.